So you got one guy looking in the paper, scouring for potential businesses.
Right, and I walk him through a process, you know, an audit process. So he calls companies up and finds out why they want to sell and what the problems are and what's working and on people's
side. Where are you looking, in the paper?
Yeah, just in the newspaper, classified ads.
So are you getting the business brokers?
Yeah, we talk to a lot of business brokers as well. And many times, you know, you ask them, well, what if somebody offered you double but you had to wait, you know, a year to do it? Those kind of concepts, right? But the situation with the carpet cleaners, you know, talk to them, and this is when I've done on my own, and I just called them up and said, why do you want to sell? I had just gone through an experience where the service from a carpet cleaner in my home was less than spectacular, as it usually is in the industry, and being the guy that likes to sell, and there's got to be a better way, there's got to be a better company. So I started researching companies out of curiosity. I realized that they all did a pretty mediocre job at doing it. I went out and I bought
Joe Polish.
Polish, and I spent $2,000 or $1,500 or whatever to buy a first one, and then the $5,000 one. And I said, you know what, hey, let's try this. So I called up this guy, and there's actually a couple for sale. And one guy, you know, I said, look, what kind of capacity do you run it now? Where's your customer? How big is your customer base? You know, what's your strategy? How do you get into market? So on and so forth. And I thought, hey, there's probably a better way to do this. And so we came up to a deal. In this case, I gave him a bit of cash up front. But I said the rest is based on what this company will do. And if this company doesn't provide the money within this period of time that I think we can do for you. And, of course, I'd gone out and tested. You know, I'd gone out and called and talked to neighbors. And that looked right around my corner, my neighborhood, as to who's doing what.
Do they have a good customer list?
Yeah, they had a database. They've been in business for 12 years. They've been doing carpet cleaning.
Yeah, how many trucks did he have?
Yeah, he had two trucks. At a database of about, the exact number escapes me, it was about 3,000, 3,500 people they'd done work for. And there was a small percentage that would repeat, you know, once every 2 years was the average that people were coming back to get their carpentry done. So I looked around, you know, I looked at my community and said, you know, what if I could own the community? What if everybody in this neighborhood that I live in, and I live in a fairly nice neighborhood, if you want to call it that, only got their carpets cleaned by me? So I started practicing more of my own copywriting skills. I'd been outsourcing a lot of the copywriting to other people in the past, and I sat down and I bought a copywriting, learn how to copywrite overnight kind of concept, right? One of those binders that you pay $500 for, and really started getting down and figuring out how to do it. And, you know, sent a letter out to the neighbors, and, you know, sure, lo and behold, with an offer, a few came in requesting information, and my first step in the lead generation process. And I got better at it, and people start taking you up, and then you start putting programs in place to get them to buy more regularly. And soon enough, if I saw a competitor's truck in the neighborhood, go and talk to the neighbor, hey, haven't you got any of my letters? You know, I'm driving down the street when on my way back from my office. And, you know, soon enough, people start seeing the truck, they start getting to know you, they start seeing that there's quality. And then I said, well, what's the next thing I can add on to this, right? About a year later, I paid this gentleman out for the truck. And then I was like, what's the next thing people have?
So you were just doing the systems and the marketing.
That's right, just that piece of the puzzle. The next step was, what else am I getting done in my house? So I'm getting windows cleaned. So I looked for somebody who did window cleaning, and I did a joint venture. Said, hey, if I can get you into these houses where I've got a relationship established, will you do it, and will you give me 20%? And sure enough, you know, I started making offers to the same houses that were either paying monthly fees for, you know, this maintenance program we put in place, or whenever we get their carpets cleaned, get an offer to get your windows cleaned throughout the house, and then who does your house cleaning, and so on and so forth. So I kept building up on that, and then once it started working really well in one neighborhood, basically flipped the same concept to the neighborhood just down the street, which is a similar demographic to the one I live in, and making sure that I can run those vehicles and the people that work, you know, for the business at 80-85% capacity, so that, you know, there's always good enough margins to ensure the business is satisfactory, right?
So was your main driving lead generation a direct mail letter?
It was. Well, and follow-up calls, people to actually do phone calls.
What was the offer? You know it?
The first offer was actually for the carpet cleaning, was on how to improve the quality of air in your home. That really was the first offer, and in this, you know, research that really explained how the quality of air in your home has a huge impact on how healthy you are, your eating habits, your sleeping habits, and so on and so forth.
And that was more of a driving force for someone rather than the dirt in their carpets.
That's right. I think the dirt in the carpets, everybody's done that one. It's overdone, so I wanted to take another approach. And by that token, you'd be able to generate, again, a lot of leads in a very soft way. But once people were approaching that level of other offers, for example, we did an offer that was very, very successful. We just basically had one of the sales guys at the company. I said, walk around, and I want you to go and talk to 20 houses next week and find out how many have Persian rugs. Turns out that of all the houses he was able to talk to, only one house didn't have a Persian rug in their house. We looked at it and said, you know, how much does it cost us to clean a Persian rug? And really, it's very, very inexpensive to clean one Persian rug.
Do you take them out, or you do it in the house?
Take them out. We'd roll them up, take them to our shop,
okay,
and clean them up. So we made an offer. You know what? Free Persian rug, as long as it's under 6x9 or less in size. We'll come. We'll gently move your furniture. We'll put stoppers under whatever you've got so it doesn't scratch your hardwood floor. We'll take the rug, we'll wash it, clean it, bring it back, you know, but you have to get it done in February. Wonderful lead generation piece. I mean, for every carpet that we cleaned, I think for every 10, 8 people got their homes cleaned. You know, we taught them why Persian rugs get cleaned a certain way and why it's dangerous just to send it anywhere and how they usually get cleaned by your average carpet cleaning Joe and what kind of insurance we have in place and where our guys went to get training on Persian rugs, to clean Persian rugs, and so on and so forth. And, you know, so when we go and pick up the rugs, of course, you know, we scope how many, what their carpets are like, how much carpet they have in the house, where their furniture, how many furniture they have. Is it synthetic fabric on the furniture? Is it natural fibers on the furniture? Do they have drapes that could be cleaned, and so on and so forth, right? All those other things that when we come back, we've got information to sell them on the value of doing the rest.
And so you still have that business going?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very, very profitable business that operates, again, very much on autopilot. Again, you know, you have to always be innovating, and that's, I think, the funnest part of my job now. What's the next gimmick or widget or offer or whatever you want to call it that you can come up with? So we've increased the number of trucks we have now. We're up to 4 trucks, and, you know, and we'll continue to flip.
How do you like Joe Polish's his course? Was that helpful?
You know, I think the key, and, you know, when I look at people who take, you know, training or courses or, you know, and I'm even considering, you know, investing in your program, I think what people need to do is, one, you got to take action.
Right.
And I know a lot of people in town, you know, when I was doing research, other carpet cleaners, they bought these programs, but they never did anything with it. So I think one is action. But two, you have to be strong enough to form your own opinions. You know, you should follow people's best practices, but you also should be willing to go and say, you know, what is it that works for me? Or how can I tweak this to really make it work for me?
Like, right.
Guys, I think something, I listened to those things that Richard, you tape with Richard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you're not a good cold caller, then find somebody who is.
Yeah.
But don't try to make yourself become a good cold caller. You know, find somebody who can do it. Learn how to recruit people who are good at cold calling. And pay them, you know, $10 for every meeting they get you, or whatever the case may be. If you know what the value is of that meeting, and if you know, and if you're really good at presenting, but you don't like getting, can't get in the door, then find somebody who can get in the door for you. You have to, I think, you know, form your own opinions and build your own system so that it works for you.
Did you buy out another business this way?
I'm in the process of working with another firm. It's actually a high-end consulting firm that does consulting for enterprise clients at Fortune 2000 type companies. And they specialize in a very specific niche of strategic planning for technology, which has become a bit of an interest with me. They've been a business that's been around for many years. They were very successful at one point, and then they kind of whittled away. So I'm in the process of looking at all the assets that this organization has that they don't really tell the market about. So doing some testing and learning in the process about that, we're going to the early stages of seeing, you know, can we do this? Can we actually, you know, find a way to make this thing scale to a level? Because the level of intellectual property and knowledge this organization has is mind-boggling. But they're not marketers. And when the market was really hot, they were really hot. But they're not anymore. The quality of their knowledge is...
You're definitely a hustler. What'd your dad do? Was your dad a hustler
He was an entrepreneur. Our family's from Chile. And my dad owned a series of businesses. And then, of course... If you understand what happened in Latin America, and Chile in particular, 1975, 76, basically he lost everything. As refugees, we came to Canada. I was very young at the time. No language skills, no knowledge of English.
How old were you when you came to Canada?
I would have been 2 years old. Background, he was, you know, taught at the university, at a university there as well, part-time. That was, of course, not valid in North America. They don't recognize necessarily your your education level when you come from a third world country. So he had to really, you know, sit back and find ways to generate money.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things that, you know, that he was very good at was, one, he never believed in getting in debt,
mm-hmm.
Which I think was a great lesson. So, you know, we lived very much a cash lifestyle. We weren't, you know, we never were rich or wealthy. We always had more money or more high net worth than anybody else that we knew, because everybody else was always in so much debt,
mm-hmm.
with mortgages and so on. So he always found creative ways to be able to buy things and so on that really required little cash outlay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they operated a small business, a service business, home cleaning, you know, and then he began to specialize in cleaning airplanes, you know, very much a service business. But, you know, they found ways to ensure that it was profitable and never irresponsible in the way the business was managed, and always encouraged us to be entrepreneurial. We didn't get allowance, so if you wanted to make money, you had to, or wanted money, you had to find a way to make it yourself.
So when you were younger as a kid, were you hustling greeting cards? And
I loved selling stuff, you know, in retrospect. You know, I was the guy that carried extra pencils at school. So I would teach myself a sport or some nature, and then I would do it in school. And I'd say, hey, you want to learn how to do it better? I'll teach you some more. So I've always been an avid learner. I just love learning about anything. Give me a chance to learn something, and I'm interested. But then I want to go apply it. I want to go out and do it.
Oh, yeah.
If I can actually do something with it, not just, you know, be book smart.
Right.
And, yeah, so it's kind of fun that way, but sometimes you have to sit back and say, okay, do I really need to read another or buy another one? I was laughing this week because I got a whole bunch of packages in at the same time.
Yeah.
All these programs that I keep buying.
Yeah.
And I'll get through them. I'm pretty, you know, I took a speed reading course. It's probably the best investment I ever made. But at University of Calgary here, they have a speed reading course.
Was it real helpful?
Yeah, I think if people are going to ever learn stuff, the best things you can learn are speed reading and typing. And so you can do those two things. You can read almost anything, and you can send information to almost anybody. So, no, I am obsessed with efficiency. I love productivity. You know, how high is high? You know,
mm-hmm.
both from how much money can you make per hour to how much can you actually accomplish,
mm-hmm.
from a, you know, tangible thing. And as I started breaking things down, as I started getting better at time management, as I started getting better at, you know, the things I did, I started looking at, you know, more of the granular details or the functional task, going back to what I learned from Anderson Consulting. You know, what's the actual functional task and how do you make that better? And I was looking at myself going, you know what, I type a lot. I spend a lot of time at the computer. How much better, how much faster can I be? How many emails can I go through in an hour if I can type twice as fast?
Mm-hmm.
But I made it a determination. You know, I took typing classes and I bought typing software. And I have an administrative and a personal assistant. And I can out-type both of them, and
mm-hmm.
Because I made it a mission to be able to be very effective at it.
Yeah.
You know, I've also, along the way, I think one fortunate thing I've also had is a lot of the software companies I work for, part of the deal I get is I get to use their software perpetually,
mm-hmm.
deal for their software and very low maintenance fees. So I've been able to automate and systematize and buy or get access to great products that really make life easy, unified messaging. Can listen to your email via calling into a phone,
mm-hmm.
or listen to your voice messages via email, collaboration tools so that you can, you know, work with people remotely, you know, web-based tools and so on and so forth. So,
advice would you give as far as being a generalist consultant?
So I think there's two things that I would do. If I was, you know, in a job right now and I was fortunate enough to come across information like what you're presenting, I think the program is really valuable. I would take that program and I would try to apply it to the job I'm doing now, particularly if I'm in a sales role. Whatever I was selling, whether I was selling carpets or whether I was selling software, whether I was selling bathtubs, I don't care what it is. But find a way to ensure that I got some practical or have some practical application of it. It might take me 6 months, it might take me a year. In any case, all it's going to do is make you better at the job you're doing. But then you're going to learn some real practical application. You're going to go through the pain of actually implementing it. You're going to go through the pain of learning it. You're going to go through that process. I think one thing that really blew me away, you know, over the past 2 years, I've gone and cleaned up some messes that some people who call themselves marketing consultants because they took a 3-day course had done for clients who had spent money on saying, you know, now what? You know, I threw this money away and I don't have anything to show for it and I still need the same results. And I think, you know, people should be responsible and humble enough. You have to realize that you got to learn it first. Guys that are doing it, you look at, you know, Jay Abraham, and you look at any of these other guys, the amount of stuff that they have read, the amount of people they have communicated with, the amount of people that they have expose themselves to learn and find their best practices is astonishing. Hundreds of years of information. You know, you look at Edward Deming, one of the top process re-engineer guys in the world. Then you read stuff from Claude Hopkins, and like you've got that slide up where things like that. I mean, you don't learn that by osmosis or overnight. So you take somebody's program, you hear somebody's tapes for a day or two, to have the expectation you're going to go out and solve somebody's business, unless you've got lots of experience in consulting in the past, or you've got analyst experience and so on, you really should be smart about it and take the first step to see how it works for you first. So if you're in a job already, great, you know, use it that way. Or can you put things together that allow you to practice this at low risk, you know, with your sister's business or whatever the case may be, with the dry cleaner down the street, so that you learn it. Because once you learn it, I think the principles, you can apply to anything. I mean, I have done work for clients, software companies that are $100, $200, $300 million a year in sales, and I've done work for, you know, companies that almost have no software sales, an example of the software industry that I've worked in. The principles have all pretty much been the same, but had I dared go after a client, you know, wants to sell $30 million next year in international market, and I haven't been through the steps of learning what it takes and learning how to test and learning how to avoid the mistakes and so on, you're risking your reputation and you're risking other people's livelihood. You don't really want to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's good advice.
So if I was a guy, I'd take that program, I would learn it, I would listen to it 30 times every night instead of watching, yeah, whatever show you watch, put the tape on, drive to work with it on, lunch hour sit with it until you can recite it backwards cold so you know that information. And then, of course, begin to round it out with other information as you see fit. As you learn more, you become exposed more. You never should never really stop learning. But once you can practice it, if I was a guy selling bathtubs and I put this information in place and I applied it to myself and I started selling more bathtubs than anybody else, then maybe, you know what, maybe I can help another guy, another company, for a fee, sell more bathtubs. I can go as a consultant now and apply it. But I've got some real-life, tangible experience. I know what it takes. I understand the customer. I understand the problems. I understand bathtubs are heavy and expensive to ship, and it's hard to find a contractor to install them. But I know how to work all around those things because I'm a bit of an expert. And who's to say you couldn't do that in a couple of quadrants in the city where they don't compete against each other anyway. So you might have four clients on the go, or I don't know, just as examples. But then you've got some experience, and then you can branch out to other companies and so on and so forth. But if you can find something that you can replicate within the industry, that's probably where you're going to make the most money. It's easier to find customers, you hold pains. There's very, very slim chance that I could call a software company that fits the profile of companies that, that I can do really good work for and not get the deal. Even if they already have an international practice. Because I've got enough experience. I know enough of the pains that they're probably going through. I know the market very, very well. I have credibility. I've got references. I've got testimonials. I've got all those good things that you're supposed to put in place anyways. But if I went and tried to call a manufacturer of oil and gas parts, try to convince them that I could help them expand into China, I might get the deal just by sheer sales ability. But really, am I going to be that effective? Am I going to make a lot of money at it? Versus if I just went after another software company. But once you get into smaller businesses, I mean, you focus on smaller market and an area like that, you have to be flexible. You have to be able to work with other companies. But you've got some experience to get started with. You've got some background. You say, you know what, I've done it. I was the top sales guy, or I was the top guy who sold mundane things like bathtubs or shoes or whatever the case may be. And then the second thing that I would recommend is if people have not gone through professional sales training, find a good trainer in town, go to good training. Every year I make a commitment to go and take consultative sales training from some organization. And yeah, I hear about the, you know, 90% of the same stuff every year, but at the end of the day, what happens, a lot of people, you know, you can sell stuff over the internet, you can sell things, seeing guys that have been very, very successful at building their business around selling information products and so on, and maybe that's the goal of some of the people that take some of these courses. It's not really the business I want. I want to become a $100 million company. I don't believe that you're going to become that by selling information products in this day and age still, maybe in the future. I don't think it'll work for me at this point, and I still, you know, I have some information products that I've done or I'm working on, but nowhere near sophisticated to the level that I like them to be. You have to know to sell, and to sell a big deal, if you want somebody to pay you $100,000 or $200,000 for a year worth of work, you have to be able to sell them on it. You have to be, understand what the sales cycle looks like, you know, how you build the credibility, what kind of things the buyers are going to be involved with looking at, how to understand their business pains and processes and so on. And if you get really good at selling, then, you know, you can use that marketing to generate all the leads you want. You can use these processes to generate big database, but at the end of the day, you have to talk to somebody, and you got to get them to sign on the dotted line, and you got to give them the reasons to do it. And then, of course, you have to execute. I mean, execution, you can sign a lot of deals, but if you don't know how to execute, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble, too.
When you first started out, you charged very little. You worked your butt off, 60 hours. What have you learned over the years as far as pricing your services, how you price it, contingency versus fee, project? Any advice on that or any lessons you've learned?
Yeah, I think what I've learned is, especially as you begin to understand a market, you begin to really know the ins and outs of an industry, especially if you specialize in the case of you know, the advice that I would give to somebody. If you charge more, people respect you more. I found that up front. Sometimes you don't know how much the money you leave on the table. I've heard a couple of people say that, and, you know, honestly, you don't know. You can always lower your price in a negotiation scenario, but you can't raise it. Once
right.
you told somebody you're going to charge them $50,000 or $100,000 for a year worth of work for them, you can't go back and say, oh, well, actually, it's $300,000. You have to start from a position. But you also have to know what the value that it is that you offer. So if I know, and I'm fairly confident, you know, if you go into an organization, you have some experience, and you know what you can do for them, and you know what kind of results you can produce, and you're fairly comfortable at providing some level of guarantee around the results that you're willing to produce for them, then you should be fairly comfortable charging a premium for that, so long as you know you can deliver. Like, never get into a situation where you can't deliver. But if I tell a company that I can sell $1 million worth of their product, and I'm going to ask them to pay me $10,000 a month commission of growth or sales or total sales for the product that I'm working on, and I know I can deliver, then no problem. In many cases, I'm more than willing to give a 100% guarantee that if within a 12-month period or 18-month period or 2-year period, I don't produce the results that I promise, and they at the same time fulfill what I ask them to do, they meet the milestones and requirements, then I'm more than willing to give their money back if I fail. Over the years, I've only had to do that once. But I'm also very reasonable about the expectation of what I'm going to deliver. You can't be an eternal optimist, which is unfortunate with a lot of people who like to buy, you know, these products to learn. I've seen a lot of guys just simply believe that people are willing to give away money, and people aren't. You got to produce something for it. So I think the one thing I've learned is, you know, you charge, and you charge the top premium dollar that you can charge, but you have to provide value. You have to justify that value, and you have to show that value very, very early on from the beginning. And you have to act like a consultant, you know. Some people still act like employees or consultants, and they're far too, well, the customer's always right. Well, if the customer's always right, then why do they need to hire an outside assistant or outside advice? So you have to stand up, and if you think they're doing the wrong thing, you got to be willing to say, you know what, Mr. Customer, I don't think that's right, and you're paying me to provide you the best advice I can, so don't go there. I've seen lots of consultants come in and say, oh, yes, sir, you know, because they don't want to lose the contract.
It seems like you offer risk reversal in a lot of the deals that we've talked about. Is that something that is pretty consistent with your consulting clients?
I believe that's one thing that there's a few things that stand out from what I've learned from Jay Abraham stuff and going through the information that he provides, is people always assume somebody has to take the risk. And in my case, you know, when you get to a level of proficiency with something and you know what the client has to do to help you get there, I think you should be willing to offer guarantees. It makes it so much easier. I remember the first time, you know, I charge a client $10,000 a month to sell their software, and it's not uncommon for a software company to pay a sales guy $10,000 a month as a salaried employee. So I figured, why not? Why not charge $10,000? Why not charge $15,000 a month for a year, year and a half, 2 years worth of work? But it made it so much easier for them to say yes without blinking when you say, hey, by the way, though, unlike the sales guy that you were looking at hiring or thinking of hiring, this is what I'm willing to offer. It became a no-brainer decision. You know, you make it easy. But I think, you know, when you're getting started, you may not know what the milestones or requirements are from the client perspective, so be careful, right? So be willing to offer some sort of risk or guarantee, but at the same time, be clear about what the milestones the client has to fulfill as part of the process. And if you don't know what it is, then don't offer it, because you might just end up having to eat your shirt in the process. So, you know, you kind of go and you have to test. I think that's a brilliant concept that people should practice, is learn how to test, learn how to go through, you know, the scientific method applied to marketing. in regards to, you know, going through, okay, well, what happens if I do this, and what happens if I do this, and let's go to the market and ask them what they think.
What's the process from the first time the call comes in, a potential client? Is it a long meeting over the phone, Q&A, that you have systematized, or is it just...
No, it is. It really is. I mean, the things that I want to do, you know, I want to get an understanding of their business, you know, really understand why they picked up the phone, you know, get down to the root. I'll go through a series of questions there, you know, what is it that they're trying to achieve, why they're trying to achieve it, what have they done in the past, those kind of things. In the process, I also want to begin to do some positioning. I think that's the best sales technique that you could ever do is, you know, whether you're, you know, selling software, you're selling my consulting services or your consulting service or whatever, if you position yourself and you do it by educating them, the customer on the things that they really need to be aware of and understand based on the situation that they're looking at, you really begin to set up a relationship of trust. So it's not about selling, but if you were to call me and you owned a software company and, you know, you really recognize that you spent a lot of money trying to go international and it hasn't been working, you've got a few guys that are responsible for it and it's just not happening, or you don't have anybody doing it, you know, I'm going to be wondering, well, what have you done? Why have you done it? What kind of relationships do you have? What kind of distribution channel do you have? How stable is your software? And I'm going to get into some of the technical details of it. Who's your ideal customer? Why should I buy a product from you versus company B? And I go through a series of questions that help me really nail down. One, is this guy a good fit? Does this guy really have an emotional need to move this forward, or is it just nice to have, and a need to have? And it could be because the board has told him that he has to do it. It could be because, you know what, he realizes that the American market might not have the stability for his product, or he really wants to grow his business and they're tapping out some of the markets that they know how to do, whatever the case may be. Or they simply might be getting a lot of requests from international and they don't know how to handle them. And they get burnt. They're afraid that their technology is going to be stolen by somebody else who just reverse engineers it and you know, some part in Asia or wherever.
I think that's great advice, and you've mentioned it several times, is really getting to the core reason. Why the hell are they calling? The real reason. And if you can find that out, that's going to give you a good idea whether you should be working with them or not.
Yeah. And it really, I see a lot of proposals. You know, I help companies do a lot of proposals in the software industry for the sale or the purchase. And when you find the real drivers, you know, you realize that at the end of the day, what this guy is trying to do when he buys your software, buys your services, or whatever the case may be, he wants to get a promotion, and he wants to make his company look good, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, it might not go out right and say it, but if you can address it in your proposal, you know, when I do consulting work, and I'm dealing with a VP of sales, or the CEO of a business, or the founder of a company, and part of my proposal says, and the objective of being able to get you to the 50% mark in international sales for your total business is because you want to, you know, be able to sell this company to a large organization, then it matters to him. He doesn't care what the sales are at the end of the day.
Yeah.
He really doesn't. But he knows that if the sales do get there, he gets this, then that's of real value and interest to him.
I really appreciate your time.
No problem, Mike. It was good chatting with you as well.
All right. We'll talk by email, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you've enjoyed this interview with Christian Cares. We covered a lot of material in this recording, and I would advise you to listen to it over and over and over again. Print the transcripts, read them, underline them, mark them up, take this audio recording and download it from the site and put it onto a CD-ROM and put it in your car, transfer it to audio tape, because Christian has done it, and he gives you a lot of advice that I hope can save you frustration, time, and effort. So thanks for listening, and we'll continue to have more great content for you, the HMA consultant. Enjoy. If you go back to my site and in the products page along the light blue section down on the left, you're going to see another link that has a lot of value, and it all has to do with joint ventures. Go to that page and you're going to hear about an offer on a joint venture system like no other. If you read the letter there, it'll describe all the benefits, and the offer is virtually risk-free, meaning you can order my joint venture system, have it sent to you without paying a dime, have 30 days to review it, to digest all the information, and only if you're happy with it after 30 days do you pay. It's an offer you can't lose on, and if you're enjoying this content, you're really going to love what I have waiting for you on the joint venture link at the products page at hardtofindseminars.com. Go check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it.